Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and the Drake and Rudy Salazar live at Pega's American Family Restaurant in Shawnee. We're on Johnson Drive right off of Neiman. I'm going to be here until 10 a.m. broadcasting live. Stop by and mention 810 and get $2 off any item on the menu all day long, all four locations. But I'm on Johnson Drive right off of Neiman. And Nate Bucati and Jake Gutierrez and Michael the intern back in studio. But right now, this is a very special moment. We have not been able to have this opportunity too often so far this year. We get to talk to Buster Olney right after the Royals win a series, considering this is only the second series the Royals have won this year. Buster, as always, your timing is impeccable. How are you, Buster?
I'm doing great, and this is a reminder, right? The Royals are not tanking, okay? Other teams
That's
are
right.
tanking, but not the Royals.
They are not tanking, and they did win 2 out of 3 against the St. Louis Cardinals, but still a very difficult season so far for Kansas City. But we like beating St. Louis. We like beating the Cardinals. And, again, this is also about individual player development and being able to turn some of these assets into prospects and things that will help this rebuild process. And, Buster, I know that you told us last week that the third base market may not be great for the Royals. It is more of a buyer's market, not a seller's market. But reliever is where I think they can get a good return. And Kelvin Herrera continues to pitch so well. You see injuries all over baseball. You see teams like the Angels who have a different closer almost every game. And Kelvin Herrera has 10 saves and a sub-1 ERA. And he's had success in the postseason before. And so
yep.
Nate and I were just wondering, you know, I know that baseball's stubborn and they'll wait until July, wait to the trade deadline. But when do you think we could legitimately see teams start to heavily pursue Kelvin Herrera to where something could actually happen?
After the draft. And I think that's going to be the case for Moustakas as well and other parts. And by the way, I bumped into a couple of evaluators over the weekend who were talking about Moustakas and, you know, trying to sort of talk through potential matchups with the Indians in trades or, you know, sending Moustakas to Cleveland or potentially sending him to Atlanta. You know, those conversations are going on, loosely among the scouts. And they'll start in earnest after the draft because everyone's focused on that, which is, begins on June 4th. And I do think that they're in a great position with Herrera. They're certainly, as a GM said to me last week, look, every team is going to look to add pitching before the deadline of some kind. It's not a specialty market like you have at third base or at shortstop where only one or two or three teams are involved. You have every contender looking for help. And what's great from the Royals' perspective in that regard is that when you look at the National League, it's so packed together. Like the five teams in the National League West are within 5.5 games of each other. There are four teams over 500 in the National League Central. The Braves and the Phillies have joined the National and the Mets in that division. And so between that and the superpowers at the top of the American League and the Yankees probably, you know, looking for ways to add pitching, I wouldn't at all be surprised if the Yankees jump into the conversations on Herrera, given some struggles early on from David Robertson and the fact that it doesn't look like a lot of opportunity to add starting pitching. I think the Royals are in a tremendous leverage position on Herrera.
So why after the draft? Is it that teams want a little more time to figure out exactly where they are? Is it that teams are busy, preoccupied, trying to get ready for the draft? Why is that kind of the time frame you're talking about?
Yeah, all of the above. I mean, now there's a good chance if you try to, you reach out to general manager, head of baseball ops, and you're like, hey, where are you? Well, I'm in Nashville. I'm watching some pitchers there. I'm at the SEC tournament. I'm there. So they're not really focused on looking to add help. And for the most part, I think teams do feel an obligation after they do all the planning that starts at the end of a baseball season and goes through the winter to give the team they put together at least some time to try to have it, try to declare themselves. And so while we in the media like to react to, two or three bad weeks, and case in point, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the teams are more patient than we are. And The other thing, too, and there's a third factor as well, I think, is that if you wanted to call, for example, the Orioles today and ask about Manny Machado, the price tag would be off the charts times 10 early on because, you know, and a team like the Orioles can set a ridiculously high price, and if other clubs say no, then they say, okay, that's fine, we'll just wait a little bit. And somebody eventually will pay it. And so if you're a buyer in May, that's a really bad situation. There are very few examples I can remember of major trades that happen in May or beginning of June.
See, Stephen, I know what Buster tried to sneak in past us there, and we're wise to it, Buster, because a little hypothetical. I'm a GM. I'm in Nashville watching prospects. I'm at the SEC tournament. Who from Vanderbilt are you trying to push on us right now, Buster?
Buster.
Guilty as charged. Guilty as charged. Sorry, but I'm not kidding, because every time a GM goes to Nashville, they say, hey, I'm going to see your boys. Where's a good place to eat?
And what do you tell them?
Loveless Cafe. Wonderful Southern cooking. And if you want breakfast, Pancake Pantry on 21st.
What about Haiti B's?
No, that might have been after my time. When did that open?
I don't know. It has delicious spicy fried chicken, Buster.
I want to hear more about this. What's it? Pancake Palace? What was it called?
Pancake Pantry. Oh. And if you want to eat breakfast there, you better start lining up at 6:30 for the 7 o'clock open, let me tell you, because there are a lot of hungry students that line up early in the morning there.
If you want to eat breakfast right now, come to Pega's American Family Restaurant, Johnson Drive in Neiman, where I am until 10 a.m., Buster, broadcasting live. Jake and Nate not allowed outside the studio to broadcast, but I'm here talking with all the Buster Only fans, people listening right now as you talk about the Royals. But let's talk about another team in the AL Central. For people that didn't see it late last night, word came out several people reporting, including ESPN.com has a story that Chicago White Sox catcher Wellington Castillo will be the latest player to be suspended for 80 games for violating the league's joint drug agreement. ESPN's Jerry Krasnick reporting that the suspension is expected to be announced today, but the source says it's not for a steroid. And say, look, the Royals have had to go through this at the beginning of the season with Jorge Bonifacio. We've seen what happened with Robinson Cano and now Wellington Castillo for the Chicago White Sox, Buster.
Yeah, and we'll, as you say, we'll get more details later, but you know what? No matter what happens, he wins, okay? Because he signed a two-year deal in the offseason for $15 million, and so after he serves his suspension, he comes back. He's still going to wind up getting, about $10 million. And so whatever he took, that, you know, if it helped him to perform, it's a plus. And I wrote a piece that's actually going to be up today on ESPN.com after I had a conversation with my colleagues Mark Teixeira and David Ross last week. And you remember what Mark Teixeira said last week about Robinson Cano, how he wasn't surprised. And I had, you know, I was talking to Mark about that, and I was talking to those two guys about how every time someone is busted, you have other players come out and say, well, you know, I'm sad, I'm disappointed, he's our brother, yeah, of course we'll welcome him back when his suspension is up. And I asked those guys, I'm like, why does that happen? Why is there a culture of protection when you have players who are clearly, in a lot of cases, making a choice to cheat their brethren, to break the rules put in by the union to keep the level playing field, and you guys treat them with kid gloves when they come back, and you say stuff that's very supportive when these guys are literally stealing money and jobs from other players and trying to gain a competitive advantage over other players. And I asked them, you compared it to the, you know, how replacement players were treated after the 95 strike, in the eyes of baseball players, these were the scabs. And, you know, guys like Rick Reed of the Mets and Kevin Millar, those guys weren't allowed in the union meetings. There were veteran players who wouldn't talk to them, who wouldn't acknowledge them. And I asked, to me, the guys who choose to take PEDs and try to beat their union brethren, that's worse than what the replacement players did. So why is this culture of protection? And those guys absolutely agreed and talked about how when you get a suspension, like we're going to have Wellington Castillo today, a media relations person, or a coach, and someone say, yeah, we got a band together. The heck with that. I mean, they really ought to treat it more like the Giants did with Melky Cabrera in 2012 when the Giants players, led by Buster Posey, were so furious, they could have gotten him back at the end of that season. Instead, they said, you know what? Stay home. We'll win the World Series without you.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Is it possible to come up with the punishment that actually makes the punishment worse than the benefits you get?
And, Nate, it's a great question, and every time we get one of these suspensions, we talk about it. Here's the reality, okay? Because everyone says, well, maybe they ought to just void the contract. You can't do that from the union perspective because you don't want to compromise the language for guaranteed contracts. That is not a Pandora's box you want to open.
Mm-hmm.
You could potentially talk about a second-time suspension, getting a lifetime ban rather than a third one. But to me, the most effective weapon for other players would be peer pressure. And to make it clear, hey, you know what? And I talked to David and Mark about this. At the beginning of spring training, what if a veteran player, a respected guy like a Justin Verlander, like a CC Sabathia, stood up and said, I just want to let all of you know that if any of you get busted for PEDs, we're not going to protect you. We're not going to say he's our brother. We might not say anything publicly against you, but we are not going to support you. And I think that potentially would have a lot of power and give potential users something to think about as they went through their offseason regimen, like Robinson Cano and like Wellington Castillo.
Buster only guest. Buster, I think one thing that's been very exciting about this baseball season is to see the number of highly touted prospects already get the call to the major leagues, and the latest one was Juan Soto from the Washington Nationals, and that was kind of a surprise. I know Howie Kendrick's injury was a big blow to them, but here he comes at 19 years old, I think ahead of schedule, and the first swing resulted in a mammoth home run. But I like it. I like teams not being afraid, and look what the Braves are doing, not being afraid to call up these highly touted prospects that are performing very well. What was your reaction to Juan Soto being called up?
Yeah, he was impressive. I mean, you look at the body and you look at the power, and he's got some plate discipline, and he's going to help right away. And you're right about, the sport is increasingly owned by the young guys. You know, now that we're 20 years past the steroid era, now where at that time, if you saw guys 36 to 38 years old, it wasn't unusual for them to have success. Now the older guys have a tougher time, especially in a game that's where you're seeing higher fastball velocity and some of the older hitters beginning to struggle with that. And young guys like Gleyber Torres of the Yankees, 21 years old, last night hit a home run, his fifth homer in five games. He's got 80, he's hitting .323. Otani is 23 years old. And I had a really great and fun conversation last weekend with Jose Altuve about Ozzie Albies, who the second baseman for the Braves, who, of course, draws a lot of comparisons to Altuve because of the size and the energy level that he plays with. And so I asked Altuve, I said, hey, have you seen Albies play? And he just raved about him and talked about, man, that guy's great. He said, he's better at 21 than I was at 21. And then Jose paused and he goes, he's better at 21 than I am at 28. A lot of young guys manifesting in the sport very early on this year.
Yet somehow Justin Verlander's better at 35 than he was at 28.
He's been unbelievable. Allowed one run in six innings yesterday, and his ERA went up from 1.05 to 1.08. He's got 94 strikeouts and 74 and two-thirds innings. And, whenever I do SportsCenter or different shows, you get asked, why. And there are two major things for Verlander. One, and we've talked about this in the past, he went for the first time a few years ago, Brad Ausmus, who was his manager in Detroit, went to him and said, look, you can't bully hitters anymore with your stuff the way you did for years. You have to use scouting reports. And Justin, by all accounts, absolutely dove into that. And the second thing was, and Justin told me this story during the playoffs last year, when he lost his velocity 2014-2015, he had a couple of injuries to his core, and he learned about his body and Pilates and rehabilitating and strengthening, the core of his body. And he was really worried that he had lost his velocity for good, and he threw a pitch in spring training. And he felt like, boy, that fastball felt good. And he turned around and looked at the radar gun reading on the scoreboard. It said 95, which for Justin was a sign, yep, it's still in there. And as Justin told me the story, and Boog Shambi, my colleague, was standing right next to me, Justin held out his arm. He said, look, I even get goosebumps thinking about that moment, looking at that scoreboard number, and he had goosebumps popping up all over his arm. And it was pretty cool, and you know, it's neat to see someone who's so devoted to his craft, you know, pitching as well as he is. He's the early front runner for American League Cy Young Award.
And Buster, another young player that we've seen. We actually saw him pitch against the Royals yesterday in Jordan Hicks. I know he hit 105 over the weekend. He didn't hit 105, but he looked so yesterday he looked in control. He looked unhittable yesterday against the Royals. But this kid, and what I like is whenever he pitches, all of his teammates are up on the top step of the dugout because you could tell they haven't seen anything like this. Never pitch above A ball, 21 years old, and he's one of the most exciting players to watch because when he comes in the game, I mean, check out Twitter. Everyone's raving about it. He's been a fun story so far.
He really has been, and you're right. His teammates become fans. And when he throws a fastball, everyone's looking up. And you know guys in the other dugout are probably doing the same thing. Two interesting conversations came out of that performance the other day. One, Glenn Fleissig, who's a biomedical engineer, had some quotes, and I can't remember, I think it was in The Athletic, Mark Saxon might have done the story, where he talked about how he really feels like pitchers are beginning to sort of reach their version of the sound barrier. Well, at some point, physiologically, you can't throw much harder than what Jordan Hicks throws at 105. And the other thing, too, is it sort of spurs the conversation because I got to believe it's a little unnerving to bat against him because it doesn't feel like when you watch him pitch like he knows exactly where the ball's going. And so we had a conversation in the podcast the other day about, you know, who would be the most frightening hitter to face? Would it be Pedro back in the day? Would it be Roger Clemens? Would it be Jordan Hicks? And I voted for Jordan Hicks. Because that ball, that fastball that he throws, that two-seamer is moving all over the place. It feels like he's kind of like someone who's driving a monster truck downhill, and he's kind of got his hand on the wheel, and he's kind of texting at the same time. It doesn't feel like he's totally in command of the situation. That would be pretty unnerving.
I mean, the catchers don't even want to catch it. I mean, they're afraid of breaking their thumbs. It's crazy, Buster. Hey, Buster, the Royals now open up a four-game series with the Texas Rangers, and Danny Duffy is going to the mound tonight. We started this conversation talking about some guys who do have trade value for the Royals. He's a guy who seems to have ruined all of his trade value so far this season because it's just been an awful year for him, and he can't figure out why. Are you hearing anything from evaluators about are there theories out there? I mean, what's the consensus on why Danny Duffy is having the worst year of his career?
Nate, I haven't dug into it. I haven't specifically asked questions. I will make a point in the next week to talk with scouts with other teams and to get some reading on why it happens. It's not too late for him to rebuild his trade value. We talked in the past about how this is the time of year. We start to get into June and July, and small sample size matters. And given his history as a pitcher, and he's had success in the past, I think there probably would be some teams that would give him the benefit of the doubt. But if he strings together and gets his command back, and, you know, baseball's great because small adjustments can make the biggest difference. If he gets that all back, if he has three or four good starts, you can get some trade value back. And I'm assuming that the Royals would be very open to any conversation because they're going through this transition period. But I will get more specifics for you next week.
All right, Buster, my final question for you. I want to go back more with Royals trade talk. You mentioned Gleyber Torres and the wonderful season he's having so far with the New York Yankees, and that takes me back to the trade that they made to acquire him when the Yankees gave up Aroldis Chapman, and that trade was July 25th, 2016, when they sent Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs, and the Cubs gave up Gleyber Torres, Adam Warren, and Billy McKinney, and so now it looks fantastic for the Yankees. And guess what? The Cubs aren't complaining. Just like the Royals aren't complaining about giving up Sean Manaea because they got a World Series out of it. But when you look at that, that's obviously, that's the gold standard for what you can get for a reliever before the trade deadline. At the time he was acquired, he was ranked, I think, like the number 26 prospect at MLB.com, 19 years old. If you use that as a standard, can the Royals, and you said the Royals should have good bargaining power with Herrera, could they hope to get something in that realm, a top 30 overall prospect? Is that too much to ask? What do you think of that trade and how it relates to what the Royals could hope to get for Kelvin Herrera?
Yeah, I think that's in the ballpark. Now, that's at the high end, you know, and it's becoming at the very high end because Gleyber Torres is turning out to be better than even the Cubs thought or even the Yankees thought, and they loved him. Like, I remember the day after the trade talking to Cubs people, and they were like, the Yankees picked the right guy. And, you know, a Yankee staffer said to me yesterday that, you know, he's better than what we, even better than what we thought he was going to be. Yeah, I think that if you're in their position, absolutely that's the case. And I think as we go along, and you, I mentioned all the teams that are contending in the National League, and what that means is there are going to be fewer sellers, potentially. And you look at all the teams that could use bullpen help. You know, the Astros, Ken Giles been up and down as a closer for them and with his performance. As I mentioned, the Yankees, if they can't find help in the rotation, I think absolutely they'll look for more bullpen help because Brian Cashman loves dominant bullpens. The Red Sox probably want to get involved, but they can't compete with anything the Yankees do. And all those National League teams, especially in the Central, you know, the Cubs have a terrific bullpen, but the Brewers' advantage over other teams might be their bullpen. You've seen the Nationals in recent years invest in bullpen. I think that Andrew Friedman, the general manager or head of baseball ops for the Dodgers, he doesn't like to necessarily pay big for rental position players. He might pay big for a reliever. I think the Royals, especially if other closer options begin to sort of fade away with other teams in the trade market, Royals should be in a great position with him, and they'll get more for him than they will Moustakas, I believe.
Buster, my final question for you, coming up this weekend as well with the Royals playing the Rangers, on Saturday they are going to face Bartolo Colon, who is turning 45 years old today, guys. Today is Bartolo's birthday. I know Steven, he's one of Steven's favorite players. And I was looking at it, 242 wins in his career. Is he a Hall of Famer, and can you compare him, just the whole package that is Bartolo Colon, to anybody?
Boy, there was a pitcher back, you know, in the 30s and 40s. His name is Fat Freddy Fitzsimmons. That comes to mind right off the bat. You know, there's a little bit of David Wells in Bartolo Colon, you know, in terms of the size and the girth and the willingness to take the ball. He has no chance to get the Hall of Fame because he had a PED bust. And, you know, I mean, he opened the door to the questions, okay, how is a guy competing at age 45? We don't know. But he is very well liked by teammates. He's obviously been terrific. I was there on the, when we on Sunday Night Baseball had him in Houston, and he had that perfect game going, I think, into the eighth inning. He was absolutely dominant with his two-seamer, and he continues to be a really effective pitcher. And, boy, nobody has more fun when he plays, that's for sure. In that game, Josh Reddick of the Astros got the first hit against him. And I'll never forget, as Bartolo Colon is relieved and he walks off the field, he points at Reddick. And you realize he's probably one of about 500 players, current active players, who have been a teammate of Colon as he's gone along. In his first game, he faced Eddie Murray, who was born in 1956. And this year, he's faced a player who was born in 1996. He's faced guys born 40 years apart.
Wow.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
I love him.
I do, too.
Buster, we love you, too. Thank you so much for all the great information, my man.
I appreciate it, guys. I will have that Duffy for you next week.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right on.
Okay.
Bye. Thanks, Buster.
I was hoping he was going to say that he was going to have a pancake pantry for us next week, but I guess we'll have to go there ourselves.
I have long campaigned for the Royals to sign Bartolo Colon, and so it's fallen on deaf ears, but he just continues to be fat and productive, hopefully like me. So, the hell are you laughing at back there, by the way?
Similar pitcher scores on Baseball Reference to Bartolo Colon: Andy Pettitte, David Wells, CC Sabathia, Jack Morris, Mark Burley, Louis Tiant, Catfish Hunter, Kevin Brown, Rick Rushel, Dennis Martinez. That's a pretty good company right there.
I'd see Bartolo Colon and CC Sabathia wrestle. Grapple. How about this? So so D Wags just left. He tweeted out his delicious breakfast here from Pegas. And again, we are live at Pegas American Family Restaurant on Johnson Drive, right off of Neiman. You can come in and mention 810, mention the Border Patrol, mention Rudy Salazar today right now, and he'll say hello. But mention 810, you get $2 off any item off the menu, all four locations all day long. But we're going to be here until 10 o'clock. And if you want to go to the fights on Saturday night at T-Bone Stadium to see Tommy Morrison's son, Kenzie Morrison, fight heavyweight prospect at T-Bone Stadium, they're going to have MMA, kickboxing, and also boxing. All you have to do is come up and punch Rudy right in the mouth. And he will give you two tickets to go see Kenzie Morrison fight at T-Bone Stadium. So stop by. It's great, Rudy, great suggestion. Thank you for
that's
for
assault, really
putting
brother.
Yourself on the line for the Border Patrol. That's the kind of guy we like. But we have some other great listeners here who for some reason like the show. And I've just been passed an announcement. So you guys get the round of applause or trumpets or something, some fanfare. Jake, do your thing. Congratulations to Corey and Abby Carpenter on the announcement last weekend of their new baby girl, Kate Elizabeth, who is due in October. Two-year-old diehard Chiefs fan and soon-to-be big brother Tyson Steven made the announcement to the family, and we believe that Tyson Steven is named after me. And so it's very kind of them to do that. It's a tremendous honor. And so thank you to my namesake, Tyson Steven, for making the announcement to the family. And he's a huge Mahomes fan, but he says he could do without Nate sometimes. That's a lot for a two-year-old to say, but you know, we appreciate his he says you're full of yourself.
So. Well, that's true.
It's weird. Sorry about that. He didn't write that up. I'm sorry. I made that up. Was that hurtful? I didn't.
Nah, I'm used to it by now.
I love you.
It wasn't very nice, though. Mean-spirited.
Well, it wasn't me talking. It was Tyson.
Well, I mean. I know it's not your words, but
I met a young lady last night by the name of Kelly Sweeney. Is a big fan of the show. Just graduated from Missouri, and she came up and acted at first like she was really excited to see me, but then said, "I went to see Stephen St. John at Schlotsky's once because I'm a huge fan of his. My whole family, big Missouri Tiger fans. We love Stephen."
Right.
Who's this? Kelly's Weenie?
Kelly Sweeney.
Thank you, Kelly.
Kelly's Weenie.
Thank you to the
love
Sweeney family.
Steven.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much. We're gonna take a break now. And we're gonna think about what Nate's done to Kansas City. But we're live at Pegas. Come out and see us on Johnson Drive, right off of Neiman. Breakfast is served. You can get $2 off any item off the menu if you mention 810, and also tickets to the fights on Saturday night. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.